He grew up in a family that clearly was deeply involved with music since the 17th century, because I had the opportunity a year and a half ago to go back and visit where we actually came from in Germany, in Bavaria, a small town called Treuklingen. And in that town, there's actually a street called Elke-Naumburg-Straße, and they were building a monument to the lost Jewish members of the town. And so they found me because of the Naumburg Orchestral Concerts. They rode in, and I said, in fact, that yes, I did know in Naumburg, and I was one of them, and I would be happy to come along. So I went to this place where I'd never been and didn't know very much about, and discovered that my family were cantors for about six or seven or eight generations, and they had come from Prague, which I did know, and had settled in this town and lived there for about 150-plus years. And then in 1848, with the changes that took place in Germany, Elkin must have decided, and so did almost all the other relatives in the town that were Naumburgs, that they would leave. And so he went and joined his aunt and uncle in America, in Baltimore, in 1853, age 15. But the mayor also said that he was very bright, and that the school he was going to go to in the town wasn't good enough for him, they felt. And so they got together and they sent him to a better school in the next town. And then at age 15, I guess he felt he knew enough, and he left America. So he came and settled in Baltimore only for a few years, but he was already buying musical tickets to opera events and so on, and trying to hear special artists, and that's noted in his own diaries. And then he came to New York, and he started at first a clothing business, and he made and developed the ready-to-wear suit, I guess would be what you'd call it today, or Sunday Best, and that was hugely successful. And so he was really retiring from active business by the time he was about 55 to 60. I think it's about 60. But he had two boys, Walter W. Naumburg, who started, or Walter Whaley Naumburg, he started the international music competition in 1926. And then my grandfather, who was his second child, who with Walter, the concerts going, and both of them went to Exeter and then Harvard, and he felt they needed a proper career. So when Walter graduated, he started a bank with him on Wall Street, and it became the largest commercial paper house on Wall Street. So that means if you want to launch a stock and you need to sell the shares, you go to a commercial paper house and they get your company going. And the name Naumburg was very reputable, and the business did extremely well. And the two boys carried that on and closed it and sold it in 1931, and by which time they were both old enough to be retired as well. They were then in their 60s. So,
but other than buying tickets to events, what about that love of music? Did it come from his parents?
So I would assume that came from his parents' music in the house. There is also a musical composer named Naumburg who's French, named Samuel Naumburg. He added an O to the spelling, so it's N-A-U-M-B-O-U-R-G. And he was clearly just fascinated by music. He lived on 58th Street between 5th and 6th Avenue so that he could walk to Carnegie Hall, and he had a box in Carnegie Hall. He was friends with Carnegie, and he was involved in bringing conductors from Europe to America. And one of the people that he brought was a man named Woods, who went on to found the Proms in London. Mm-hmm. And he also was friendly with a German conductor who did something like this in Germany and so on. So I think in the parlor, in addition to all these recitals, the idea must have been discussed about what would it be like to start a public concert series to allow people who wouldn't gain access to classical music so easily the chance to have that and to hear good concerts and to broaden the base of it. And also I think he wanted to give back to the country that he prospered in.
So it was sort of an ideal circumstance, because here's a person with the means who loves music. So many times you run across people who love music but just don't have the means to do much. And so I guess the arts were the really lucky beneficiary of what it was that he could do for the community. So let's talk about the concerts. The concerts actually started before the construction of the band shell, well before, right?
Yes, the concert started in 1905 at the spot in Central Park called the Concert Ground. And concerts started at the Concert Ground in 1865. And one of the three designers of Central Park, Jacob Ray Mould, was a great lover of classical music. And he started concerts one year in the Ramble, which is just north of the Concert Ground. And then the next year he brought them to the Concert Ground space. And they had a band stand there made in cast iron, designed by Vaux, who was Calvert Vaux, who was the architect and did all the cast iron work in Central Park. And concerts were hugely popular at that site. And
thousands of people, as I understand it. Thousands, right?
And the whole design of that space, which remains and has been somewhat restored by the Central Park Conservancy, draws people to this one very formal set piece architectural spot in the park. The mall, which is just south of the Concert Ground, has four avenues of elm trees either side of it. And it was also called Literary Walk because they started putting literary sculptures up. But it draws you up from downtown, which is where most everybody lived when the park was built. And then it brings you to the Concert Ground. And the Concert Ground had a vista, and the mall was aimed at the Belvedere Castle. And the Belvedere Castle was scaled in a specific way so that it looked distant and somewhat small. And Belvedere means beautiful view or beautiful mm-hmm. vista. And so that's why the castle has that name. And then there were sprayer pools at the end of the Concert Ground to cool people who were at the concerts. And then there were actually bird cages as well. And then the band shell, which where the concerts ended up moving to, has a staircase by it, not just to bring performers up into the stage, but more importantly, there was what was called at first a ladies' refreshment stand, and then it was known as the casino, and it was a very elegant building with additions by Joseph Urban, one of the great 30s and 20s of 20s architects mm-hmm. in New York. And people could go up and down and have a refreshment, and they could sit out from the Wisteria Pergola and watch concerts on the Concert Ground very, very easily from that elevated position. So it was a very busy, busy place in 1923. And they didn't knock down the casino until 1936. So up until that change, that was a really magnetic spot in the park for people to come and see entertainment.
You know, I mean, still today, when I walk through Central Park, I think about what a stroke of brilliance it was to create Central Park in New York City. And we all get so much pleasure out of it still today. I mean, it's just amazing. So 1905. Well,
and then after the concert, you could go down the Belvedere staircase and you could go to the Belvedere Fountain, and then you had Bow Bridge and you had the lake and the gondolas, and then you could walk up into the Ramble in the Woods. And so, I mean, it's a really clever, clever plan. And it's hidden away in the park so that you don't see either the West Side buildings or the Fifth Avenue buildings, or mm-hmm. you hear the traffic. Once you're in that tranquil oasis of the Concert Ground, you really just have the trees and the music, and it's really a really special place, I think.
Oh, amazing. So how that 1905, the first concert. So this year we're celebrating the 105th anniversary of the concert series. When did the idea for the band shell come about?
Okay. In 1912, the park commissioners decided that the cast iron bandstand was no longer in a good state of repair, and also functionally they felt they could improve upon it for the popularity of the space. And so they invited Carrere and Hastings, who designed the New York Public Library, amongst other buildings, to make a design, which is on deposit at the Art Commission, as are all these projects. And he designed that on the west side of the Concert Ground, very physically adjacent to where the bandstand had stood, near where the Beethoven sculpture is today. But the park commissioners felt that it blocked a vista across the Concert Ground to Sheep Meadow and into the interior of the park. So they turned the proposal down. And then they invited people to make a design that would be in the hillside or on the other side of the park. And the architect who Elkin Naberg employed, was another family relative. He was William Gabriel Tacco, mm-hmm. and he had gone to the École des Beaux-Arts in Paris, graduated, and had a very good grounding in neoclassical buildings. And the City Beautiful movement was alive and flourishing after the Chicago World's Fair and all the public buildings that were put on the Federal Plaza in Washington and so on and so forth. The great luminaries of that style are John Russell Pope in America, I suppose, up through the 30s. But William Gabriel Tacco fits right into it. He designed all sorts of interesting buildings in New York, several which are landmark armories, was one of his specialties. And so he designed this building for his great uncle, I think it was. And it's based on the Pantheon in Rome and has that same domed roof with a stepped paneling at the back, and then it has a flat lip, and then it has a decorative area with beautiful plaques with swags on it, and then he tucked all of that into the hillside. And it's actually a double dome, which is similar to the Pantheon in idea, so that there's a kind of acoustic response mm-hmm. from the inner dome and then a water protecting outer dome. And the dome, it was the first spandrel of its type in America, and it was used to project the sound out to the audience and had a very good acoustic response because it's pre-microphones and loudspeaker systems.
Yeah, the other night when we had to turn off the sound system because it was raining and the musicians agreed to keep playing, I actually was very impressed at not only how powerful but how lovely the sound was without the sound system. So he achieved his goal, I think.
Well, also musicians have said that the way the dome works, the half dome, is that it centers the sound so that when they're performing, they can actually hear each other playing quite well, which modern stages don't afford you. Like if a tubular steel stage doesn't have any acoustic response at all, you're requiring monitor mics and monitor speakers and so on. Whereas in the bandshell, you can actually hear what the members of your party are doing while you're all performing together. So that's an advantage of the building. It's also architecturally a handsome mm-hmm. building because of the coffered dome. It's missing a lot of features that would make it more attractive, but the basic concept of it is quite nice. And it's the only neoclassical building in Central Park, and it's absolutely typical of its time, and it's a little bit early in terms of the apogee of that style, which is maybe 10 or 15 years later. But
now, the first concert in the bandshell took place what year?
1923.
And I thought it was interesting when I read about the bandshell that the first concert consisted of what are considered to be a lot of WQXR listener favorites, music from Aida, from Carmen, the William Tell Overture, the Blue Danube Waltz, Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, and Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture. So clearly they were sort of on the same wavelength about thinking about what the general public would like to hear. I bet it was a really successful concert, I'm guessing.
And it opened or it closed, I guess. I think it opened with On the Mall, which was Edwin Franco Goldman's commission and mm-hmm. has become a famous piece. And it was dedicated to Elkin Namburg for the opening of that of the Namburg concert series, so that year.
Now, before we talk a little bit more about the actual preservation of the bandshell, let's go back to Walter Namburg.
Oh, the other thing I was just going to say, sorry. And so that building was designed in 1916 and approved at that point. So 1912 was the Carrere and Hastings proposal. 1916 was the Namburg bandshell. And then it wasn't built until 23.
Wow.
Because Elkin Namburg felt it was inappropriate to build a building of pleasure while the First World War.
Yes.
So that's why the delay of 7 years.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's nicely sensitive of him. Talk a little bit about his son, Walter, and the role that he played in preserving the concert series, creating a legacy.
Okay. Well, Walter was also a very good cellist and had quartets in his house weekly, I understand,
uh-huh.
and owned a very fancy cello, I know that, and loved Shakespeare and was very involved in the arts. And he didn't have any children, so when he died, he left an endowment for the perpetuation of the concerts, and that's been what has kept the concerts going principally. That's the underlying funding that allows us to keep the concerts alive. But that endowment hasn't done at all well. And so now I fundraise very, very actively and have tried to increase the endowment and have changed the management of the endowment and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what assured the legacy going forward. And then we've tried to use Naumburg winners because he started this after 3 years after the band shell opened. He started this competition, which is quite prestigious now and used to take place in Town Hall, but I mm-hmm. think now all the recitals take place in Alice Tully Hall or various other sites. And we now try to use the Walter W. Naumburg competition winners as soloists in our concerts as
uh-huh.
well.
So okay.
to kind of name brand the Naumburg names.
Right.
And to benefit from these fantastic young artists.
Right.
Because we actively seek out young artists and rising careers. And I think it gives us wonderful music and it gives them a chance to grow their career. And I think that's a great thing to be doing, and it's within what the family's been doing for a long time. So,
well, and since you're here on the WQXR website, we should also mention Elkin's grandniece. Did I get that right? Eleanor Naumburg Sanger. Tell us about her and her connection to WQXR.
She was married to Elliot Sanger, and he was one of the co-founders of QXR. I think there were three people involved, and Eleanor was a very active music programmer. I think she was the music programmer when the series started, when the radio station started. And so she was affiliated with it until it was sold to the New York Times. And then they worked for the New York Times as employees of WQXR for quite some time. And meanwhile, her brother, who was Ned or Edward Naumburg, ran the Naumburg Concerts in the Park. And so that was the sort of heyday of the Park concerts as well, because WQXR broadcast live many of the concerts. And when I was a young child, that was how I first heard the concerts. Either I was brought to a concert or we would sit down in the living room and listen to it on WQXR on the radio. And my mother would make commentary about the music at the time and I would learn.
I love that. Yeah, but so. I mean, the bottom line is clearly the world of classical music has a lot to we need to be thanking the Naumburg family in a big, big way, because Elkin Naumburg's the ripple effect has been tremendous in terms of what he's done for classical music. And we should be thanking him every day, perhaps, on the air. I don't know.
Well, and his grandson, Philip Naumburg, who's my mother's older brother, they're three children, George, Philip, and my mom. And Philip went out to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and he decided that they needed classical music there. And so he started the Santa Fe Chamber Music Festival with some other businessmen and people interested in the community and growing the community. And now that's a very respected institution in Santa Fe. And he was very, very active on the board for his entire life. So.
This is just tremendous. I mean, it's really incredible for me to listen to all of the support, all of the things that are being supported as a result of the fact that Elkin Naumburg originally was interested in classical music. Now let's go to sort of the tougher subject. Truth be told, preserving the band shell has been a little bit of a struggle. And, you know, when I think about preserving the band shell, I think about Isaac Stern and his work in preserving Carnegie Hall. And I talked to Mayor Koch at one point about the work that he did with Jacqueline Onassis in terms of preserving Grand Central Station. Why is preservation sometimes such a challenge?
Well, I think it's always, you know, buildings divide people for reasons that vary from site to site. I mean, Grand Central Station, there was all the commercial potential, I suppose. But the other side was the great urban amenity that the station gives to everybody every day who passes through it, people who don't benefit from a commercial transaction that builds an 80-story or a 60-story building and the rent that comes in. And in that sense, I feel the band shell is on common ground in that it gives pleasure to people who are interested in music in the park. You know, the opportunity, it's there, and it's a very beautiful, functional building in a great spot, and that's its plus side. Its downside is that there are people who at the time wanted to donate money for another project, for a new kind of building, or to change the use of that space even. And so that's been the dynamic. There's also an architectural dynamic that it's an addition to the park, but as an addition, it's nearly 100 years old, and the park is full of many less distinguished additions that follow on. And people have restored all of them lovingly. I mean, there wasn't a single playground in Central Park, and nobody would dream of taking them all out because they're modern additions.
Right.
The Delacorte Theater is considerably more modern, and no one would dream of removing it. The Lasker Rincon Pool is the same. And the ball fields didn't exist, and they're hugely popular, and nobody thinks of removing them. And so, and it's like a laundry list of names. One could go through the Heckschers. The Low Boathouse is different from the original boathouse, and nobody's taking it down, and so on. So I would hope that people would embrace the Bandshell and the wonderful qualities it has, and the fact that it's at the concert ground, and that we would see many more concerts at the concert ground going forward, and that that's part of restoring the park, that everyone could rally around. And I just don't see any downside to it. The benefit is that people would have more free concerts and more opportunity to enjoy those in such a beautiful setting. So,
yeah, I think it's important for people to embrace not only the history of the Bandshell, but the future. You know, when I go to your concerts, and we're going to talk a little bit about those before I let you go, when I go to your concerts, I'm so impressed by the energy that comes off of that stage. And these musicians are the future of classical music, these young people who play so brilliantly and with such commitment and with such passion. It's really amazing to see. And all you have to do is go to one concert to experience what that's all about. And I think when you say people need to jump on the bandwagon, that's what we're talking about. Have the experience, see what it's all about, and know that we need to preserve this for the future, right?
Well, the park has been, you know, extensively restored, and the Bandshell has sort of languished as an unloved orphan. But for me, in a way, that's also fine. I've gotten used to that because there are other people who don't want to restore it, it would seem. And it looks to me like a European ruin, you know. And if
when
people
in
rush,
Rome.
Right, or you go to Greece and you go and hear live theater in a great ruin,
right,
or so on. So even in its ruined state, I see it as a very beautiful building. But there's no doubt that a lot of the audience comes up to me and says, you know, why isn't it being fixed up? Wouldn't it look great if it was fixed up? We'd love to see it fixed up, and so on. And I just hope that we could gather the momentum to have enough people come forward to make the Bandshell get restored. And, you know, it's a gift to the city of New York. It belongs to the city of New York. So they're the stewards of its future. And the Central Park Conservancy are the people who are responsible for its maintenance now by contract. So it's really those two parties that control what happens at that site. And I would love to see them initiate a program of embracing the building and seeing to have it restored. I would hope that, you know, the Nombergs, who have given 105 years of free concerts there and will continue to do so, wouldn't be the people they would expect to be restoring the building, as that's been given to some other body, mm-hmm. but that they would be grateful that we've programmed it and will continue to do so, probably for the foreseeable future, and that they would work with us to make it a better place for New Yorkers to enjoy in the future. So
if someone is listening right now, where should they go to try to help? To your website?
They should go to our website and let me know how.
And the address is?
info@nombergconcerts.org. And okay. Nomberg is spelled with two U's.
That's important to note because I'm always spelling it with an E. Don't listen to me. I've got it wrong. And we should say that there are two concerts remaining this summer. We have on July 20th. Both of these are Tuesdays, right?
7:30 p.m.
July 20th, Time for Three. Tell us about them.
Time for Three are three young musicians who were all at the Curtis Institute of Music, and they were suddenly sort of pulled together to do an impromptu performance in Philadelphia because the conductor was ill and something happened. So they got asked to, you know, fill the gap for a few minutes while they settle things. And there was such a wonderful public response to the music that they had played that they formed a group. And now Time for Three is internationally booked, and it's a wonderful
So this is a great opportunity to see some really fabulous guys do some really interesting things, right?
And they make all their own arrangements, and it's a very free-ranging program, so it's not totally based in pure classical music. Some of it goes into the 20th century in a more popular genre, but I think that people will enjoy it because they are classically trained and they have a wonderful classical interest and they have a fresh approach to it. So I think we used Imani Winds twice.
We love now. Imani Winds.
And they have the same fresh idea of writing new arrangements, working with music in a fresh way, in a fresh approach. And that's how I see TF3 adding to that for Naumburg and also introducing them to people who liked Imani Winds, who came to Naumburg concerts.
Okay, so TF3 or Time for Three, that's Tuesday, July 20th at 7:30. And then the final concert, The Knights, on Tuesday, August 3rd. I was there for the first one. I can't be there for this one, but let's tell the folks a little bit about The Knights, the folks that are listening right now.
Okay, again, The Knights are a young chamber symphony orchestra. They're fantastically talented group, and I just think they're one of the great ensembles working in the city right now, and we are very fortunate they're willing to collaborate with Naumburg and give us two concerts this summer. They opened our series, and now they're closing it. They rehearse an extraordinary amount before each concert, and they discuss amongst themselves how they're going to interpret the music, and it's very evident when you go to a concert how wonderful the results of that sort of scientific approach are for the listener. So. Mm-hmm.
Another great opportunity, really. Such fabulously talented young people that play in The Knights. Well, Christopher London, it has been such a pleasure talking to you, and I thank you for everything that you and your family have done and continue to do for classical music. Amazing. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm honored that I'm allowed that privilege by having been a member of the family, and I hope that I will be able to continue to do so until I pass on to the next world.
Which won't be soon, I can tell folks that. Thank you.
Thank you.